Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruriak. Here in the West, President Trump was live early Sunday morning detailing the killing of ISIS's leader. Democratic leaders in Washington had not been notified, apparently, about the raid, so that's a major political headline as this week begins. The other being the resignation of Katie Hill, who represents California's 25th district. Reporter Carla Marinucci.
I bet.
She writes Politico's California Playbook. How are you, Carla?
Hey, good to be with you.
So you were in a potential power shutoff area going into the weekend in the Bay Area. What happened where you were?
Yeah, we were. And we've been out of power now for about 36 hours, I think it has been so far. This is the second time we were out the first time as well. Smoke is hanging over the Oakland Hills. A very wide swath of the East Bay is without power. So, yes, the folks on our Politico team, all of them were affected by this power outage. So we've had to scramble this morning to get out our California playbook at 6 a.m. when it normally does. It means getting out there in the complete black and trying to find some place that's open that has Wi-Fi. It's just an example of, if it's frustrating for us, multiply that by 2.2 million people in California, and you're getting a picture of what the political implications of yet another shutdown is.
What creatively did you do? Because I know you need a laptop, you need to charge your cell phone.
That's right. There's no Wi-Fi, no cell, no nothing in the Oakland Hills. There's no communications. What I had to do the last time was head out and look for a place open at 3:30 in the morning to start filing. And, of course, Starbucks isn't open at that time. I actually ended up on the floor of a 24-hour fitness filing my playbook. And that's the kind of thing our staff had to do this morning as well. This is a real dilemma, and it really kind of shows, it's just one little story, but so many Californians are dealing with no childcare, no schools, restaurants, everything closed. This just shows why Governor Gavin Newsom is, all over this, saying it is not the new normal. And we talked to Jerry Brown this weekend, who said, "Oh yes, it is the new normal." So,
right. Well,
example of the political challenges ahead.
Let's start with the current governor, and he's declared the statewide emergency. Already in the show, we've talked a little bit about the movement of resources, but what options does the governor really have in this situation?
I mean, he understands that if people think this is going to be a regular occurrence, this is going to weigh very heavily on him. He's mentioned several times in the last couple of days that he has been here just 9 months, not 9 years, not 19 years. But the fact is, the buck stops with him, and he knows it. So he has been saying, we will not bail out PG&E. He told our Angela Hart that yesterday, that accountability is where he's at on this. And he has been very, very hard in his message on PG&E that there is a plan to get out of this. This is not a 10-year process. He says that will not be the case, and that California is going to demand something radically different than what was done in the past with PG&E. What are his options at this point? I mean, you've got some cities, Sam Liccardo being one of them in San Jose, are already talking about public takeover of utilities. Jerry Brown says that is a very complex and very hard way to go, and that officials may not understand how complex that is. So right now, Gavin Newsom's options are, I mean, he's got to get them. First of all, he's got to get control of the situation. He does seem to have that. He was all over the North Bay yesterday, getting out his message that Californians can get help and trying to calm the fears. But we're already being told that there are more shutoffs possibly due later this week. This is a political nightmare for Gavin Newsom, and there's not much he can do about the weather aspect of it. So he has to work and to control the anger against PG&E and demand PG&E come up with some solutions.
PG&E, in fact, talking about that next round of power shutoffs being as early as tomorrow evening. When you talk about calming fears, then you go to former Governor Jerry Brown's words. I'm going to quote from the Politico playbook. This is only a taste of the horror and terror that will occur in coming decades if officials in Washington don't deal with climate change. And in fact, the former governor's on his way to Washington this week, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. He's going to be testifying before Congress on this. And, you know, Jerry Brown has said for a long time that this is the new normal. And what we're seeing in California is only a harbinger of what's going to occur around the globe in Africa, in Canada, in Latin America. He says that this is something, of course, the Trump administration has not dealt with, has denied, and that Congress has been unable to mobilize. He is being very, very strong in his words. He's not kind of sparing anything. And he absolutely publicly disagrees with Gavin Newsom about this being the new normal and says that it is time for elected officials to get serious and to stop, dancing around what is the very dangerous scenario that looms just in a couple of years, not only here in California. So I think it was very, very interesting to sit down and talk with him this weekend. But he is talking about PG&E and he as well, and says, look, this is a very complex thing, and a takeover of PG&E, that's one of the things that has been talked about. That may be politically untenable. That may be turned into higher gas prices and other issues. So he says that it's time to look at this from a non-ideological point of view, that cities should not be rushing to take over the power business. They have to understand fully what the new normal is and deal with the issues of climate change, then get to issues like perhaps undergrounding. And that is an issue about that people like Loretta Lynch, the former PUC president, have brought up, saying, look, California is taking a $2 billion hit every time these, economically speaking, every time these outages occur, that maybe undergrounding has been considered way too expensive in the past, but maybe now this is the time to actually sit down and deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, the hearing that the former governor is headed to has an interesting name, Trump's Wrong Turn on Clean Cars.
That's right.
I'm talking with Carla Marinucci. She writes Politico's California Playbook. I was going to shift to the congressional delegation reacting to the news that they didn't know about this ISIS leader raid happening, but let's jump first to the Katie Hill story. John Myers is tweeting this morning, you might know this as well, Carla, that Assemblywoman Christy Smith has announced a campaign for the seat that Representative Katie Hill says that she is going to resign from. I think this has been a surprising and still unfolding story for a lot of people in California and across the country.
Yeah, I mean, we broke that last night about Christy Smith jumping in. And look, she won't be the last one to jump in on this one. This is the California 25th Congressional District. Katie Hill was already facing a crowded field in that race even before this horrendous story broke last week, when she was the subject of a piece on a conservative website, Red State, that sort of opened this whole story up. It has been a nightmare for her, and I think it's been a nightmare for Democrats. A flow of embarrassing and defamatory reports that have basically popped up, accusing her of having a sexual relationship with her legislative director, Graham Kelly, and then also with a campaign staffer. She has denied that relationship with Kelly, but look, the fact is, some incredibly damaging photos got out there. And even though Katie Hill was considered a rising star in the Democratic Party since she was elected in 2018, she was part of that blue wave, Beth, and Nancy Pelosi immediately tapped her to be a vice chair on oversight, which is right in the middle of the impeachment issues. That was a plum assignment. So she was on her way up when this happened. She was very close to her congressional district. She did town hall meetings. She was considered a really good example of what a freshman congressperson does. And yet this story erupted, and it just blew up a career that she's not even been in office a year.
She has said that it was her husband, whom she is in divorce proceedings with, who released the photos, that he was trying to humiliate her. I think the story will go on, but it will change once she has stepped out of office and her political career has ended. We don't have a date for that at this point, do we?
No, we do not. And, you know, there are some people that are pushing back on her and saying that she shouldn't resign. We've heard from Equality California, the head of Equality California, which is a major LGBTQ advocacy group in California. And Rick Zurbs, he has said, look, she should keep fighting, that people are behind her. They're on one hand, a lot of people feel like this is a double standard when you have Donald Trump accused by multiple women of sexual harassment, when you have Duncan Hunter being accused of having multiple affairs while in office, yet neither of them have been touched, and yet Katie Hill pressured to resign. On the other hand, you've got an issue that the Democrats are dealing with. They have an impeachment issue going on in Washington, and the distraction of being asked every day about these salacious reports, I imagine. Nancy Pelosi has been very tough on sexual harassment. That put them in a bind. This story basically handed incredible amount of ammunition to folks like Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham on Fox News, and they were already starting to be all over it. And so as Democrats were dealing with impeachment and some very serious stuff, the Katie Hill story was a problem for them. And this was the first time that such allegations have involved a female lawmaker, Beth. That was the other issue. And so Democrats were being put under scrutiny as to whether they applied the same standards to a woman as to a man. And, you know, with Al Franken, with John Conyers having to resign on sexual harassment issues, a lot of people were looking at this to see if the same ruler would be applied to Katie Hill. So this is a traumatic thing for the Democrats, and Republicans are watching it very closely. But boy, already that congressional district has a crowd of people looking to take over Hill's seat. This is going to be interesting to watch.
All right. I can't have you bring up Nancy Pelosi's name and not address the fact that she and Adam Schiff, other Democratic leaders, were not told about this remarkable raid and then the event of the killing of the ISIS leader over the weekend and then the fallout from that. So I know you're writing about that story as well. Where do we go from here on that one?
I mean, this just shows the political divide that we're at in Washington when the president of the United States essentially says he trusted the Russians more than he trusted the Speaker of the House and Adam Schiff, the head of House Intelligence, to handle this information. This is a complete departure where presidents in the past have dealt with terrorism in a bipartisan fashion, in the sense that Republicans and Democrats stood together in Washington against any threat from the outside. But President Trump made it clear that he didn't see it that way. And Nancy Pelosi told reporters that this is just unheard of, that the House must be briefed on a raid like this. So this is part of oversight. This is part of their job in advance of a critical issue like this that involves national security. So I don't think we've heard the end of it, and we haven't really heard the president. I haven't been asked or pressed on this action that he actually gave more warning to the Russians, the Turks, and the Syrians, apparently, than he did to his own, leaders in Congress. I think that's an issue that has yet to be fully explored and just shows the divide and how deeply it has grown in Washington.
Well, he was emphatic in his live address Sunday morning in talking about the leaders of the other countries and the long list of countries. At the point of that address, we didn't know that he hadn't notified Democratic leaders. So that puts his remarks and the emphasis on the world communication that was happening in a much different light, knowing he hadn't brought in everyone in the Washington inner circle.
That's right. And to suggest, as he did, he said Washington is a leaking machine, essentially disregarding his own congressional leaders on this very critical raid, and saying he doesn't trust Americans to uphold American values or to protect Americans here on an issue like terrorism. I think it's a very significant thing, and I think we haven't really heard the end of where this will go. Does this mean he will no longer inform Congress and the Democratic leaders in Congress of major security issues? I think he needs to be pressed on that question.
Yeah, I think that is the question. What is next? All right, Carla, thank you so much. Good luck getting power back, although depending on where you are, sounds like it could be days. It could be late this week.
We'll survive, we hope. Anyway,
you need to take a page from Jerry Brown and Ann Gust Brown. Didn't he say that they have solar collectors and lithium ion batteries?
Yes, he said we don't have to worry about PG&E. We're totally off the grid. So, maybe it's time for all of us to go there.
All right. Well, thanks again. Thanks for your time and your reports, Carla.
Okay, good to be with you. Thanks.
That is Carla Marinucci. She writes Politico's California Playbook. We've posted a link to her latest playbook writing at capradio.org/insight. This is Insight on Cap Radio.